Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another edition of program Dare to be Different. It's just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming Midway 1548 Satellite Islam on DSTV Bouquet 826, and to those of you that are fortunate enough on the DAB Plus, which is being done as a trial run. And we are talking to JJ van Rensburg, who's from Garden World. Garden World is not just an ordinary center, it's an experience. When you go out there, there's so much to do for the family, and you'll be definitely inspired. And online with me is JJ this morning. Hi, JJ, thanks for being with us.
Good morning, and good morning to all our listeners out there.
Thank you very much, and this morning I thought we'd start with something different. You know, I've been reading an article about insects, how to attract insects to your gardens. Why is it important to have insects in our gardens, JJ?
You were probably wanting to say how to encourage the insects to stay in our garden, because, yeah, I think so often we forget about those little tiny critters which needs to be in our gardens. You know, if you think about it, what happens to compost when it turns into compost? We need the insects to break the compost down. We need insects to pollinate our fruit trees for us, our flowers for us. We need the insects to also help us bring bird life into the garden. Can you imagine if we didn't have any insects in the garden and there was some insect-eating birds that was coming into the garden and there was nothing for them? They would leave immediately again. So often people forget how important the insects is in our garden.
Now, when we talk about insects, you know, people, you know, sort of cringe when they think of hojos and insects and say, well, these are not things that we want into our garden. Why should we have them? Take us through some of those things.
Yeah, no, I think let's start first of all by the pollination. I think the pollination part of it is probably the most important. So often you'll find that people will have fruit trees and they'll come back to you and they'll say, but you know what, my fruit tree is flowering beautifully, but it's not bearing at all. Especially passion fruit, you know, your granadillas. People so often don't get the insects pollinating the granadillas, the passion fruit. And if you don't have pollination happening between the flowers, obviously not going to have any fruit whatsoever. I mean, we are not only looking at bees. People always think that bees are the pollinators. Yeah, they are pollinators, and they are working very hard to pollinate all our fruit for us. But just as the bees pollinate, so does the flies, so does the wasps. You can't believe how much pollination is done by wasps. And so often we want to just get rid of those wasps because we don't want them in the garden. And they are vitally important. So let's look at pollination, and let's look at that as being the first factor why we want them in the garden. It is our own food security. So if we did not have insects in the garden, we would not have pollination and we would not have food in the garden. Secondly, if you think about a compost heap, if you did not have the worms going through the compost, the earthworms going through the compost, the different beetles helping you to devour the compost, your compost will take a lot longer to break down. So then we get down to the smaller insects, the microbes. Yes, they also do their part, but the bigger insects is what starts the whole thing. And therefore, so often whenever you break up in a compost heap and you see all the insect activity in there, you actually feel good knowing that the insect is in the compost and it is working. It is busy being broken down, and you can much sooner use it in the garden than what you would have done without any insects. If you only were relying on the bacteria and the microbes to do it for you and the heat to do it for you, it would have taken a lot longer. And then thirdly, once we look at the amount of animals that the insects bring into our garden. Yeah, I was talking about birds just now. You get your insectivorous birds or your carnivorous birds, those that love the insects. They would not be in the gardens. Your geckos, all the smaller, all the other reptiles would not be in your garden. And you know, we want to bring wildlife back into our gardens. And we can't bring the insects back into the garden. You're not going to get the wildlife in your garden, because what's there for them to eat? What is the attraction? So therefore, I think it's very important for us to bring the wildlife back into the garden and to love the insect that is also around.
You know, what you've just explained is quite an exciting cycle, because it's not just one thing. It's one that attracts the other, and we need all of that in a garden. But yes, you know, when we talk of all of these, we find each one has a very specific place. And I was reading an article the other day that says bees are under threat, and that's a worldwide concern. Is that true?
Unfortunately, Ismail, you're going to laugh at this, but the reason why the bees are under threat is because there's too little bees. It's not the fact that we do not have bees. or that there's not enough flowers for the bees, but that there is too little bees to actually do the work that they're supposed to do. So it's quite strange because, yes, first thing that gets blamed is the poisons that's being used. So, yeah, over the years, the people have been using the better poison, a more environmentally friendly poison or chemicals that will not be as harmful to the bees as what the older poisons was. Yes, I do agree. Poisons have played a role in the past. But nowadays, our bees are actually dying out from overworking themselves. You can't believe it. But with the amount of bees that we've got, and the amount of flowers that needs to be pollinated, and the amount of honey that needs to be collected, or pollen that needs to be collected to be turned into honey, bees are actually working themselves to death. And it's quite strange that a bee will carry on working for as long as it can. You know, so the workload on the beehives are twice to three times of what they are supposed to have at the moment. So yes, there is a lot of reasons why the bees are getting scarce. But one of them is the fact that we just do not have enough bee farmers out there, people with beehives, and people knowing how to look after bees. You know, so I would say that, yeah, bees is a big important insect for us that needs to be looked after a lot better, together with all the other insects. But I think bees is one of those that's made the headlines.
So what you are saying is that there would definitely be an encouragement for people to go out and do, you know, bee farming, because we need more of them. But what you also mentioned is something I've never heard about before, is that that bees are being overworked, and the amount that there is, or would you say there's so much food for them that they can convert that into, you know, the pollen that they collect and convert it into nectar and honey. So there is that, because of that's the amount that there is out there, there's not enough bees to pollinate all of that.
There isn't enough bees to pollinate all of it. And also what we must remember as well is that, yeah, in springtime and in summer, we've got a lot of spring flowers, we've got a lot of summer flowers, we've got a lot of blossoms, fruit trees that will provide the bees with a lot of fruit, also food. But a lot of us do not have enough other flowering plants throughout the rest of the year. So if you've got open spaces, or if what the farmers are doing now is in their fields, in between the maize or whatever they're planting, they are planting wild flowers, which flowers during the off seasons, so that the bees has got something else which can sustain them as well. Quite interesting that a lot of your larger orchards down in the Cape will ask a bee farmer or a beekeeper to bring in all his beehives to come and assist with the pollination. So that beekeeper, I think some of your larger farms brings in up to 1,200 beehives into their orchards to help with pollination. Because obviously if they don't pollinate, they will not have a fruit, a crop. So therefore, I think it's quite important for us to now also understand that, yeah, there's a lot of bees, there's a lot of work, there's a lot of flowers in spring. But then as soon as spring is over, summer's got some flowers in them, autumn has got a lot less flowers in it, and winter has got a lot less in it. But bees do not hibernate. So bees need to work throughout the year. And therefore, we need to start looking at how we can plant winter food and autumn food for the bees so that we can encourage them to stay in our areas. You know, it's actually by law, you are allowed to have 2 beehives on your plot, even in the city. So if you think about it.
You're telling us about 2 beehives per plot. Go ahead with that.
All right. Okay. So you're allowed by law to have 2 beehives per plot or per stand in the city, in the town. And can you imagine if we just had to encourage our neighborhoods to have at least 1 beehive per block of houses? Can you imagine how much more pollination, how many more bees, how many more insects we would be encouraging into our households, and how much more we will assist nature and assist the bees out there to not work as hard as they are doing at the moment. Remember, bees can fly up to 2.5 kilometers away. They would find their beehive quite easily again. So it brings a much bigger picture to the whole bee the bee idea, the bee farming idea that we all have. And they often call the honey liquid gold. If you look at the price of honey of nowadays, it is really liquid gold. So I would definitely recommend those guys out there who has got the guts, who has got the time, who has got the space, to try something like that. go for it and try it.
I must say that's fascinating, but let's just go back. You know, I think we need to also, lots of people have the fear of being stung by bees and wouldn't want to have it around children. Is there a real fear about that?
Well, I think there's definitely a fear about it, and there's definitely a lot of people that is allergic to it. But you know what? You learn to live with them. I mean, we live out on the farms here, on the plots here, and we've got a lot of bee farmers out here, and we learn to live with it. So, yes, we wouldn't necessarily leave a lot of sweet things lying all over. And yeah, on the day when the bees is a bit of a problem, we close up all the fizzy drinks, we close up the sweeter drinks, you know, so that they would find somewhere else to go and enjoy some sugary taste. So I think you would be as careful with anything in life, you know. And I think that to be afraid of a bee and to run away from the bees the whole time, I don't think it's really worthwhile.
Okay, let's go back to the question about, and I think you were talking about, and I think we as gardeners could do something for the bees, and that was in winter. What do you think would be the type of plants that we could, put down in our beds that would attract the bees? Would there be any specific type of plants, or would it be just anyone, any plant?
Well, remember, any flowering plant that will give off a lot of flowers during winter will actually be good for the bees. I think about the normal indigenous Namaqual and daisies. Bees love the Namaqual and daisies. I think about our lovely primulas that we have every winter. Bees love the primulas. So there's so much that bees would actually go for in our own gardens, you know, that we should not stop. We should just plant a lot of flowering plants. Very often there's so many plants that attract the bees that we don't even know of. So I would say, yeah, just carry on planting a lot of flowering plants. And if you specifically want to attract some bees, for instance, to your veggie patch, plant a few lavenders that is flowering next to your veggie patch, because the lavenders will bring the bees closer and the bees will then pollinate the rest of the veggies for you as well.
So when we're talking about it, and I was thinking about the three P's, the poppies, the pansies, all of those particular plants in winter would definitely attract the bees.
That's it. Nowadays it's actually five P's. It's poppies, primulas, sweet peas, petunias.
Okay, so they've now increased.
So I've increased it for you a bit.
Okay. Thank you very much for that insight into the bees. And now, you know, the other one that we find is also, you know, sort of a fear about, and that's dragonflies. Why is that? And wasps, let's take those two.
There shouldn't be a fear about dragonflies at all, because dragonflies cannot do anything to you as a person. But dragonflies is a sign of a healthy garden and a healthy pond. So if you have some dragonflies in your garden, that's a thermometer of knowing that you've got a healthy garden. So you don't have to fear dragonflies at all. Wasps, yeah, that's a different story. You know, you've got to be careful of how you disturb the wasp's nest. So what I normally recommend people to do is try and keep some wasp nests on the property far away from where you normally would be. So if they are nesting somewhere, you know, which is not necessarily in the eye, or which is not necessarily where the children play a lot, or where you work a lot, leave them to nest there. But if they are nesting in the area where you are working a lot, where the children are, where you might disturb them, then rather get rid of them on that spot. You know, so wasps overall, there's a lot of wasp nests all over that you don't even know of. So I don't think we should be too concerned about keeping some of the wasp nests, but I think it's quite important for you just to make sure that they're not there where you're disturbing them and where you would actually be attacked by them. Normally a wasp will only attack you once you disturb it. So no, if you don't disturb it, you don't have to be afraid of them at all.
Okay, I'm just taking, going by step back, if there's an attack of both bees and wasps, what is the best way to protect yourself? Would be running towards water? I'm just trying to think, if something like this happens and you find that you're going to be attacked by both the wasp or the bees, what would you do?
Normally, if you were being attacked by a swarm of wasps, you would actually just go in a completely different direction from where they would be coming. Just to show them that you actually agree that they are superior than you, that they would be stinging you, and that you are in their danger zone. So if you get out of their danger zone, great. If you did see a swarm of bees moving from one area to the other, because one or two bees would not attack you, or if you were getting close to a beehive and they would suddenly turn on you, yes, that would be bad. But if you had to see a swarm of bees moving from one section to another section. I mean, very often it's a black swarm, a black cloud of bees moving across. You'd actually just be very calm, very still, and let them move past. Do not run, because once you run, they would see you, and they would start attacking you. But if you let you could be a couple of meters away, and they would be moving right past you. And if you were to walk away very slowly or move away very slowly, no problem whatsoever. But do it gently. As soon as you make any sudden movements, they would attack you. And then you'll need to go and best would be to either close yourself up into a car, into a building, into something where you could get away from them, or, as you say, run for water and jump into a pond of water, a swimming pool, something like that.
Well, I'm just worried about the swim. If you can't swim, don't do that.
I do agree.
Now, you know, the others that are very beautiful and very calm to have in any garden would be the butterfly and the ladybirds.
Yeah.
Now, take us through both of those and tell us something about both of them.
Right, so what we need to remember about butterflies is just a cycle of a caterpillar. And a butterfly, as beautiful as it is, a lot of the butterflies do lay eggs in the garden as well, so that'll bring in more caterpillars into your garden. Very often people will say, I don't want any caterpillars in my garden. And if you were really thinking about it, very few caterpillar colonies would actually destroy your garden. I mean, a lot of them is very natural. If you think about the wild peach that gets devoured once a year, the butterflies and the moths slice past, they lay eggs on the wild peach, and it eats up all the leaves, and within about 2 weeks, you've got beautiful leaves coming out your garden again, or out your tree again, and your tree looks just as healthy as it was before. If you were looking at, I obviously love butterflies myself, but unfortunately your butterflies is only really there for two seasons in the year, for two very short seasons in the year. You will not find butterflies in the garden the entire year. It's normally very early in spring and normally very late in summer. So you would find that them there mainly in those two seasons, and then the odd butterfly maybe throughout the rest of the year. But mainly in two seasons you'll have the swarms, and then you should actually enjoy it. You should enjoy this for what they are and for the beauty that they are, the beauty that they bring into the garden. And if they were to lay some eggs in the garden, so what? That you can sort out afterwards. Ladybirds, of course, is something that we want in our gardens. Ladybirds are carnivorous. They do not eat plants. They eat insects. They eat mainly aphids. So if you have, the more ladybirds you have in your garden, the better it is for your garden. So therefore, very often, if you were using an organic insecticide or pesticide, it would not harm the ladybirds at all, because you want the ladybirds to stay. So therefore, if you find any ladybirds in the garden, keep them there. Try and make a ladybird habitat so that they would actually grow there. I've seen on Pinterest and so on, they've shown lots of ways of keeping ladybirds in the garden, and one of them is by taking one of those thick sisal twine ropes and roping it around a pole and wetting that sisal twine rope, because that ladybirds love nesting in that thick sisal twine ropes, and then that'll bring in more ladybirds in the gardens. When I went to America somewhere in 1997, which was, 20 years ago, they were selling bug houses. They were selling ladybird bug houses, and you could go to a nursery and you could go and buy your own ladybirds for your garden. That was quite interesting, quite something to see. Nowadays, they even make butterfly houses, which looks like a postbox, which is turned upside, right up instead of being flat, so that the butterflies can move in and out of this postbox quite freely.
Just a quick question with regards to ladybirds. Now, the ladybird would be the orange with the black spot. What about the yellow with the black? Is that regarded also as a ladybird?
No, that's regarded as a pumpkin fly. So it could either be the orange with the black spots. It could even be a red with black spots. There's lots of different colors of ladybirds. But the pumpkin fly, which looks very similar, which has got a much longer face, a much longer nose, a much longer body on it, that is a pumpkin fly. And that is something which you don't really want, because that normally stings your pumpkins, actually the pumpkin flowers, which then develops into a larva in the pumpkin fruit, which will then obviously create caterpillars or worms in the pumpkin fruits. So in all your cucurbit varieties, which is pumpkins, chem squash, I'm talking about your cucumbers, all of those. So, yep, the pumpkin fly that you do not want.
Okay, so we have the difference. And finally, you know, I was reading an article, before we wrap up this part of the conversation, I was reading an article about creating a hotel for bugs and insects, and like you've explained, there are some ways of doing it to attract some of these. Any other ideas about logs? Would that perhaps, or would compost help in attracting some of these?
Very often we forget about the simple things that attract insects into the garden. You know, we want to clean up the entire garden, and then we want to go put a nice big bug hotel or insect hotel up for it. They call it also an insect habitat. But if you were to leave leaves on the ground, a lot of the insects will actually be nesting in the leaves. If you were to leave a pile of little twigs together, you know, or wood together, that'll give them space to overwinter. So I think, yeah, there is a lot of spaces which your insects can actually overwinter in. Talking about the places where people, where insects can overwinter in, so often people will say, oh, I've got spiders in my garden. You know, and a spider is actually a very good thing for your garden, because the spider will, again, help you get the entire life cycle, the entire garden cycle going again, because your spiders live off a lot of the insects. So even spiders in the garden is quite good to have in the garden. But getting back to your insect habitats or your insect hotels, I think that's quite important, quite easy to make yourself, quite easy to do. You don't even have to work very hard to get the insects to stay there. But remember, the main reason why you want to attract the insects, or why you want to make the insect hotel, is so that the insects are able to overwinter, that the insects have got a space to be protected from the winter cold and protected from the winter winds. So, yep, that's why we want to keep our insects in our gardens and in our homes, and that is why you would give them a space, you would make a space for them to stay there.
Thank you, Manish. Thank you very much. We're going to go for a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll continue. Stay tuned. You just tuned in. This is Radio Islam, Midway 1548. And my name is Mahmoud Riyab, on the program Dare to Be Different. We've got a wonderful guest online with us, and that's JJ from a very beautiful garden center out in the area of, you know, on the, if you go onto the highway and you coming up from, it's off Bayez Nodir Drive, to about 12 kilometers from there, and it's a wonderful experience to be out there. And to all of you, wherever you are, if you're curled up in bed, if you're not as adventurous yet, wanting to get into the garden, please remember that you could join our conversation, and we're talking about insects and anything else you'd like to hear from us. Hi, good morning, JJ.
Hi, good morning, Ishmael.
Thank you very much. And we're talking about insects and insect hotels, and I know lots of people are saying, well, that's not for me. I want to get into the world of real gardening. Now, just tell us something about gardening and what could be done this particular time of the year.
Well, in the previous half of your program, we spoke about the 5 P's, and I think the 5 P's is what brings us all our color and all our joy in winter. And I prefer the winter color to the summer color. I really do. And because I think the colors are so much more intense, and I think that winter, we often think that winter must be a dry, dead, dusty time, and it shouldn't really be, because if you think about the amount of color that is available, the intensity, the variety, it's so much bigger that you can have so much more fun, and will give you it will give you a reason for going out into that beautiful autumn and winter sun and loving the outside and doing something out there which will warm up the body and get those muscles going again.
Now, when we talk about, you know, gardening in winter, and there's so much to be done, and like we said, and I've been saying this for the last couple of weeks, that traditionally South Africans put away all winter equipment come the beginning of end of March and say, well, we'll wait until September or wait until August and we go back into the garden. But that's not true anymore. Is that right?
I think a lot of people think they should hibernate over winter. No, we should not hibernate over winter. There's so much to be done. Planting of seedlings, preparing of your flower beds, planting of winter and spring flowering bulbs. That should happen now over winter. You know, if you think about it, so often people say, what is the right time of the year to start gardening? And I say, any time of the year. You should be gardening right throughout the year. Do you think about it, how many summers you've got to live? How many summers, how many times you are able to enjoy your garden? You should be gardening throughout the year. And what I love about your winter and spring flowering bulbs is the anticipation. Once you've planted it, you know that you've planted something which is going to be so special in a few months' time. Once they start growing, once they germinate, once they grow up and they push out these beautiful flowers, and you know what it's going to look like. That anticipation is just something else, you know. So I would say definitely start planting your winter and spring flowering bulbs now really. Prepare your beds for spring and summer. If you are not going to be planting your winter seedlings, prepare your beds so that when you start planting, that you know that you'll prolong your summer, that you'll prolong your flowering period throughout the warmer season or throughout the warmer months. There is so much that you can do. Do not sit still.
Couple of questions. One with regard to peas. Is it too late to plant peas?
It's definitely not too late to plant peas from seedlings. It is a bit like planting it from seeds itself. This year the pea seeds has been very scarce. Not everybody had pea seeds, so I'd rather plant them now from pea seedlings. Remember that you've got about 3 months before they're actually going to be fruiting. And if you think about it, May is here, June is here, July is here, and then it's starting to get warm again. You know? So I would not plant the pea seeds. I'd rather go for pea seedlings now.
The question coming through with regards to stone fruit. Is it the right time to prune?
It's a bit early to prune. I wouldn't be pruning my stone fruit before about the beginning of June. I think if you were to prune it now, there's still a lot of sap moving down into the root system. Remember, we are now on a downward movement of the sap, so we've got to wait for that sap to all move down into the roots before you start cutting it away, so that once it starts sprouting again in spring, that you'll have beautiful, lots of new growth, lots of strong growth coming through. And if you were pruning too early, all that energy that's supposed to be stored in the roots has now been pruned off.
So a question still with regards to stone fruit. I've had a query with a person saying that the apricot tree hasn't been bearing any fruit in abundance. In fact, very little. What do you think has gone wrong?
They've been pruning it too often. Apricots only need to be pruned really once every 5 or 10 years. You do not prune your apricot every year because, remember, it bears fruit on last year's growth. So if you're going to be pruning your apricots every year and thinking that you are doing good, you're actually doing bad because you are cutting away all the buds which is already producing fruit. So I think that's possibly what has gone wrong. And also something else which could have gone wrong is the feeding. You know, if you have not been feeding your trees with enough potassium, I'm talking about an 815, a 315, anything which is high at the end is your potassium, and that will force the plant to fruit. So do not prune your apricot often, and remember you must feed it with something high in potassium.
Question with regards to grenadillas. Grenadillas haven't been, the question is, I haven't been getting enough grenadilla fruit. Do you think I've done something wrong?
If your grenadilla has been flowering well and you have not been getting any fruit, it's probably the pollination that we spoke about earlier that has not taken place. If it has not been flowering well, is it getting enough sun and is it getting enough fruit? You know, you can take a grenadilla which is not flowering and not fruiting from zero flowers to 150 fruit by just feeding it correctly. So I would advise you, I'd definitely look at the feeding, and I love using a 815 on the fruiting plants because 815 is so strong and it really produces so much energy and fruit. So I would definitely look at using an 815, which you'd normally be using on your roses. So use that on your grenadilla and you should see a huge turnaround in fruit.
With regards to grenadilla, again, the bush is becoming very, growing wildly. What do I do? Can I prune it? Should I cut it down? What advice do you have?
Grenadillas is only supposed to last about 4 years. If they've grown for longer than 4 years, take them away, remove them, and plant new grenadillas. They do not bear well after about 4 years or so. So if it's long and leggy and it's in the first or second year, yeah, you can cut it back. Unfortunately, yeah, it does make long tendrils and it does grow a bit wild. But that's just the growth habit of the plant itself. And if you were going to reduce it, if you were going to cut it back, if you were going to contain it, you can do so. It's not a problem. Remember that you will be obviously cutting away a lot of the fruit as well, because it normally bears a lot of the fruit on those longer tendrils. You know, so yeah, how much fruit do you want, and how contained, how neat do you want the plant to be? That's the two questions you need to answer yourself.
I think this would be a similar answer then for the bougainvillea. It's growing very wild. Can I control the bougainvillea?
Definitely you can control the bougainvillea, and you should control the bougainvillea, because the bougainvillea has got the energy, or it's got the ability to send out a lot of long water shoots, and if you're not going to control it, you will get a lot of these long water shoots, which very often grows very untidy, and it takes over and it doesn't produce enough flowers. So I would much rather control it by cutting it smaller, keeping it smaller, and keeping it in a manageable size, because Once it outgrows the area, it's very difficult to bring it down into a manageable size because of all the thorns and this vigorous growth that it's sending out.
The question of berries, what is available, what should be planted, and what type of care do we take for berries?
Berries, you must remember, prefers a very cool root system. So if you were planting berries in your garden, remember to plant them in between other plants or to use a lot of mulch on top of the berries, on top of the root system, so that your root system can stay nice and cool. What is available? There is so much available nowadays. From your common old gooseberries, right up to your blueberries, right up to your blackberries, your raspberries, and then they've got new blends out of raspberries and blackberries that they call a tayberry variety. It looks like a little mulberry, if I want to call it that, but it produces beautiful fruit. They grow to about 2.5 meters tall, quite strong growing and easy bearing. So often people will say, you know, berries, I don't want to try berries because I don't know if it's going to succeed in my garden. It will succeed in your garden. It's very easy to grow. Remember that they do like very acidic soil. So very often you've got to use normal acid compost, but if it's not acidic enough, get yourself some aluminium sulfate. Water that in around the base of the plant, and that will acidify the soil, and you should get much stronger growing and much better fruiting berries.
And it is now citrus season. Any watch points?
Yeah, citrus trees, we've got to remember that the citrus should all be in fruit at the moment. So quite important that you should not be feeding your citrus trees with any high nitrogen feeds during the fruiting season. Now you'll be using an organic 315, and then immediately after it's fruited, you should be using something very high nitrogen. Normal LAN actually works extremely well on your citrus. So if you were using LAN once every 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks, you would be getting a beautiful tree, very strong growing, lots of leaves, and then obviously beautiful fruit. But once it starts flowering, you would stop with the LAN and you'll carry on with organic 315s. Unfortunately, yeah, throughout the year nowadays, we do have the bubbly leaves, and that is unfortunately a psylla. It is an insect which does sting the fruit. Now, there isn't really an organic spray that you can use. I've heard of people with huge success by planting lots of onions or wild garlic around the citrus, and that deters the insects. But if you are not planting onions, if you're not planting the wild garlic, get yourself some plant care or something like that. Spray the plant with it, and that will kill the insect. But remember, if your leaves are affected, they will not recover. The new leaves coming out would be fine, but the older leaves will not recover. So unfortunately, you're going to have to wait for the new leaves to grow out, and then break off or cut off those infected leaves.
And that would be for any of the plants that have infected with the psylla, is that correct?
Correct, yeah. Any of the citrus varieties that get your psylla, not only the lemons, because so often people will say, I've only got lemons and what's only growing on my lemons is not growing on my other citrus, but on all your citrus, which does get that psylla. Unfortunately, the insect is microscopic, so you won't find the insect. And once the leaves start developing, once the leaves are still in a budding phase, is when the insect lays its eggs in the leaf, and that's normally when the infection occurs and you can't see it. You know, you only see the results after a couple of weeks once the leaves develop.
What about doing something systemic, but I don't think that you could eat the fruits, is that correct?
The plant care is systemic, but remember that plant care has got a 3-week waiting period. I prefer using a systemic product which lasts for the first 6 months in the ground, in the plant. So if you were to use something immediately after fruiting, you would be treating the plant and it would be free of insects or insect activity for the next 6 months, which is normally sufficient to then get the plant fruiting, flowering and fruiting, and then by then it would have worked under the plant system, your fruit will be clean, you can use the fruit with no problem whatsoever, and then immediately after fruiting, treat it again, and you will know that by the time that you need to use it again, by the time that it would be fruiting, it would be fine and clean, and you're welcome to use it again.
You know, I know I have lots of queries from our listeners with regard to a particular plant, and that's a curry leaf plant, and you have, the psylla infecting it all the time, and they can't really use a systemic remedy. Any other hints for that one?
There is organic remedies against Acilla, but what you must remember with a lot of the organic remedies is that they are life cycle disruptors. They're not necessarily killers. So if you spray it on today, you're not necessarily going to kill it immediately. You are going to help disrupt the life cycle so that the insects will, for instance, not be able to multiply. They'll not be able to lay eggs and new insects to hatch out again. So I would definitely recommend you to touch your local nursery, opting for a product called Pyrol, P-Y-R-O-L. And Pyrol is one of the strongest organic insecticides or pesticides that you are able to use today, and you can eat the plants tomorrow, or you can eat the leaves tomorrow, or use it in the cooking, and it will have no effect on you whatsoever. So definitely, yeah, go and ask at your local nursery, what do they have? One of those that we sell is Pyrol, but please, guys, don't take any chemicals for granted. Do not remember that you've got to keep your safety precautions. You've got to keep it in place so that you will not be poisoning yourself.
And then, you know, we have the last show of our lawns. Any particular watch points with that?
On the lawns, we've got to remember that it is getting quite cold now. And if you want to keep your lawn nice and beautiful throughout winter, you've got to remember to, first of all, feed it with a flowering plant food. The potassium, the 315 or the 815, does also make your lawn cells nice and strong. So therefore, you're not feeding it to encourage flowering, but you're feeding it to get the stems, the cells strong. And then, of course, start watering early in the mornings. Not too early, not so early that you would actually be freezing your lawn away, but water it just before the sun rises, and then you know that you are washing away the coldness. I actually saw the other day the first frost on my lawn, and I was quite amazed that I had a bit of frost on the lawn, even though it was only about half a square meter worth. I thought to myself, sure, that's quite early in the season to get some frost, but if you are able to water that frost off just before the sun rises, your lawn would be defrosted so that the sun would not be damaging it, and you would get a beautiful lawn throughout winter.
When does your garden show start?
Our garden show is going to be starting that last week of July. I've got the dates in front of me, but you can be sure of it. It will be starting the last week of July. We've got some sponsors in this year, which will be bringing through the SHLT flower exhibit back to South Africa again. I saw the model of the exhibit earlier this week, and this year they've got very minimalistic. They've got a round cylinder in the middle with a beautiful backdrop on it, and then the flowers, the felt coming from that in all directions. So you've got a complete round design, and I think it's going to be amazing, as it always is.
Yes, it's always amazing. It's always fantastic to see that particular display. And when you go out to Garden World, I think it's something that you look forward to. And finally, I know that I'm speaking about this all the time, and people have been saying, but, you know, Oriental veggies, why is it important and what it is? You know, we come to the end of the program. Just a couple of, do you have enough of these Oriental veggies available?
Oriental veggies is fun veggies to plant in the garden. Yes, there is lots of different kinds of Oriental veggies available. I'm thinking of the pak choi. I'm thinking of mizuna. Pak choi is, of course, a little Oriental cabbage. Mizuna is an Oriental lettuce. You get the bigger growing Chinese cabbage. Then you get your broccoli, your Oriental broccoli. And it's all interesting veggies that you can plant in your own garden. So, yeah, definitely. I mean, if you want to bring the fun back into your veggie garden, if you think that you've grown it all, so go and get yourself a couple of Oriental veggies and try them. They are amazing to plant. They are so easy to grow, fast growing, and it just brings a different kind of flair to your veggie garden.
And you have them available, JJ?
We have them available at Garden World throughout the year. Your varieties will change as it gets into season, as it goes out of season. So definitely, y'all, come and visit us. We will definitely be able to help you with either them in seed form or in seedling form, mostly in seedling form. It's easier in seedlings in any case. But yeah, definitely, you're welcome to come through and we will be able to assist you.
And finally, your directions to your place?
Ishmael, I want to quickly just mention something else before I give the directions. We've got Mother's Day coming up, so for those of you who don't know what to do with mamas yet, I don't know, I know there's a lot of Stephen DeLon watchers or followers out there, and we've got Henny Jacobs on seven, from Seven the Lions or from the Seven the Lions cast, who's going to be bringing his guitar through, and he's bringing a guitar through, but he's going to be singing here at the Garden World Mother's Day function. So if you want a book for the Mother's Day Garden World function, go and have a look on our website, gardenworld.co.za. You will get all the details out there. And it's always, Mother's Day is always a wonderful event at Garden World. And for those of you who haven't been to Garden World yet, shame on you.
Yes.
Garden World is out on Bayers Montier Drive in Muldersdrift. So we are 12 k's north of the N1 Concrete Highway. And it's actually a lovely drive out here. It's very quick. And yeah, we are open every single day of the week. The tea garden is closed on Mondays, unless it falls on a public holiday. But yeah, I think for those of you who haven't been yet, it is really worthwhile coming through. It is a fantastic outing for the entire family, as you said earlier. And for you, who's been here a lot of times, we are welcoming everybody back. Come and enjoy the day here with us. The tea garden is open. The craft markets are open. We've got a wonderful play area for the kids. We've got an animal farmyard. There is really so much to do.
Well, thank you very much, JJ. You take care. Everything of the best. And thank you for being with us on the program. It's just fantastic to have you on this one skin.
Thank you very, very much. And thanks to the listeners.
You take care. Thanks, Tom. Bye-bye.